All right, well, welcome back to another episode of At the Movies. I'm Scott Wolfile, and as usual, we're here to discuss going to the movies and why we think that experience is so impactful and what it means as an exhibitor to bring that experience to an audience. And today, we have a super special guest with us. We have Oliver Robbins on the show, writer, actor, director, producer, but you may know him as Robbie Freeling from the classic horror movie Poltergeist. How you doing today, Oliver?
I'm doing great. It's a pleasure to be here with you guys.
Oh, it's a pleasure having you. Absolutely. One thing I want to kind of kick this off with is this is a question I think we normally ask ourselves quite a bit and most of our guests that come on. So why don't we start with this one? Can you tell me about your most memorable movie going experience?
What was my most memorable? I think you're going to laugh, but going to see Snow White when I was 5 years old and my parents took me to it. And I was terrified. I mean, I almost thought it was like a horror movie at the time. I think I was like 4 years old. And I remember the witch and all those scenes. And I had nightmares because of Snow White. Snow White was actually like an awful experience for me at 5 years old. I had nightmares after that.
Yeah, I definitely remember that.
I used to have a Snow White bedroom when I was a kid. But to your point, early on, Disney movies and Disney cartoons are dark.
They are.
We don't think of it anymore because Disney's, you know, Disney. It's the mouse
fluffy
house.
And fun. But I remember that scene in Snow White when the witch is like on the top of the cliff and she falls off and she's forced off the cliff. And that's for like a four-year-old who hasn't really seen very much, especially then. That's pretty violent.
So can you tell me how this movie-going experience has changed for you now that you've been able to pull back that curtain a bit and see how the process is made, and now that you're an actor, writer, director, producer, how has that movie-going experience changed for you?
You know, it really hasn't changed that much. In terms of when I go to a movie theater, I'm a fan and I'm ready to be entertained. I can really separate myself. When a film isn't really working for me, then I go into my film school mode and I'm breaking down the scenes and the structure and I'm thinking, we're at the act beat one and now we're at the midpoint. And that's when a movie really isn't working. But when a movie is, I'm like everyone else in the theater. I'm just watching it and I'm loving it and I'm completely being entertained. So that, you know, it really hasn't changed for me since I was really a kid. And you know, I'm really a film nerd and I've always have been since film school. And I just love going to movies and I just love sitting there and just being entertained. And that's what I do every night. I watch something new. I say, you know, I haven't seen this. It's a gift when I get something that's so great that I've never seen before. Mm-hmm. And yes, you know, as a filmmaker, you can totally analyze it. You can break it down. You know, that scene was rotoscoped and that entire scene was ADR. But when a film really is working, you really forget all the technology.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about that. So you actually have a new movie out right now. Celebrity Crush. I actually watched it last night. So this came out May of this year, right?
Yes, it came out right during COVID and during all the film. So all the film festivals are pretty much canceled that it was going to be in. Some weren't done virtually. So, but one thing that was good, because it was really slated to have almost no theatrical release, people got to see it immediately. But I think it was just limited because people had not as much money. And I think the world was kind of in shock, you know, at this point. So I think in many ways, it really did hurt the release. But the one thing that's great, because it's online and it's, you know, it's a virtual kind of environment, people will be able to watch this in months to come. So in terms of the exhibition for it, it has a life that will continue long after COVID is done.
It's a horror movie, right?
Yeah, no, it's sort of semi-autobiographical. I based it on all my life experiences going to these autograph conventions. And I thought, what would be the worst case scenario? I mean, the ultimate worst case scenario of a fan became obsessed with me and she wanted me to be her own, trapped me in her house and basically lived out her fantasy with me in her little like shed in Florida. So it's a crazy, it's almost black comedy to some degree because the things she does, this character, are so crazy, but she's a believer. And you don't know whether to laugh or scream or even what to think because you're in her mind. And this person's so sociopathic and so nutty. But at the same time, what she's doing is kind of funny to me. Oh, I'm getting a call. That must be my fan. Yeah.
It looked like the immediate panic on everyone's face.
I was like, oh my God.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if it was my phone or whose phone. I was like, oh man, I'm the producer. Oops. I can't have my phone ring during this.
It's always like that.
It's like white for a split second.
Yeah,
yeah, it was, we, it we've got a pretty free form format here. So like we'll edit some things if we need to, but for the most part, okay. We just like having the conversational atmosphere and having little surprises like that.
I think it's organic. Yeah. I just think it's part of the process of doing interviews in real life.
Mm-hmm. Well, after watching your movie last night, I definitely took note that you are quite the horror fan. Like I saw nods to all of the classics, you know, from Halloween to Texas Chainsaw Massacre to Misery. So really fine craftsmanship on this film, sir.
We wanted to make a film. This is what we did as a kind of a joke to test it out. The movie, it's a movie within a movie. Like my character's in this film called Chain Face Clown that was released in theory in 1985. And that's who the character's obsessed with. And she wants me to relive the lines and relive the part of Chain Face Clown. So we wanted to do kind of an homage to all those 80s movies. And what we did as a test, we created the poster, we put it out in social media, and it was Chain Face Clown. And we didn't say, we said this was a real film that actually came out in 85. And people were writing in, oh yeah, I remember that film. I loved it. Or people would say, I didn't see that yet. I really have to take a look at that movie because our poster looks so real from the mid 80s.
So I have to bring it up because you said you paid homage to all these like 80s horror films that are, we now today know as these big iconic films that kind of changed the horror game. And you, I mean, you were in one of those movies.
I know. And I that's what I kind of did a little bit of an homage to that. I mean, the movie in Celebrity Crush is more of a B-level film that kind of picked up speed years later. It wasn't like an A-list studio movie like Poltergeist. But I do, you know, I have a little Easter eggs here and there through the movie that kind of nods to Poltergeist. But in terms of the genre and the style and the design, it doesn't have that, you know, big budget kind of feel of a studio movie. This was like a really low budget movie that just picked up speed years later in Celebrity Crush.
Yeah.
Where did you shoot it at?
We shot it in Florida, and we shot it in the height of the summer, and it was vicious. It was like the most humid summer, but you know what? It worked great for the characters and the situations because that sweat you see in my face is real too. And you know, we had air conditioning and everything like, but when we turn off the air, when we're rolling cameras, that sweat started to form too. And I have to tell you, you know, shooting in Florida was amazing. The people were so nice. The film board was amazing. And we didn't really have a monster budget to make this movie, but we just wanted to get it done. And they did everything they possibly could to help us, which I don't know if that really would have been possible in Los Angeles on this level of film.
Well, I'm really glad you got it released.
Yeah, no, we showed it we premiered at the Dances of the Film Festival in LA, and people really, if I can use the word, they digged it. They really liked it. They connected with it. And a distributor said, hey, we want to put this thing out there for you guys. And they did, and it's out on all digital platforms right now. So this is my commercial. So definitely check out Celebrity Crush, playing now on Amazon Prime, Vudu, and other digital platforms. because the thing is, you know, there's so many movies out there, and I'm guilty of this too. I'm just thumbing through movies on Amazon, like, what's this? And there's so many big films with like well-known actors, and I'm like, wow, I didn't even heard of this movie. Like, where did this come from? This film is awesome. So you really have to do everything you can, I think, to promote your movie as an independent filmmaker.
Mm-hmm. So one thing we were actually talking about yesterday on an episode that we haven't released yet was that this is the perfect time of year. Like, this is my favorite time of year, not just because of Halloween, but because of all of the great content that usually returns to theaters around this time. And Poltergeist is definitely one of those. Basically, like, it's one of those films that has always stayed with me, like, since I was a kid. Like, living vicariously through you on the big screen is now why I'm afraid of clowns and braces.
I'm glad I did that. I did that to thousands of people, I'm told, though, too. So I'm glad I was able to be part of that childhood nightmare.
Okay, I want to talk about that scene for a second, because you told me something when we chatted the other day that I did not realize when I kind of was doing research and reading through. I had read that the tree scene was shot backwards, but in fact, it was the clown scene that was shot backwards.
Exactly. So this is what happened, you know. This is before they had CGI and all the digital effects, which is, you know, it's probably a really good thing how they did Poltergeist. That's why all the effects look very real, because they're all practical. And the way they did the clown doll scene, they said, Oliver, you're going to act backwards. And I said, like, what does that mean? He says, well, we're going to roll the film in reverse. And I said, what we want you to do, we're going to pull the arm away from you. And then we're going to run it, when we play it forward for the audience, it's going to look like the arm is wrapping around its head. But the trick is, what you have to do, you have to start being terrified. The pinnacle of fear. And then go down. So start big and then go small, you know, in terms of, and I was like, I was a kid. I was used to all, every day there was like a new challenge on that set. So I was like, okay, I can do that. So that's what you're seeing when you see Poltergeist. I'm actually acting backwards so the arm could look like it's wrapping around my neck.
I hate clowns.
I think everyone does. I hated clowns actually before. Actually, I even did Poltergeist, and I think that's one of the reasons why I got the role.
Why is it that clowns are so scary? What is it about clowns that are just so unsettling?
I think there's something going on behind their eyes, and we don't know what it is. And they seem sort of ominous, and there's something kind of that you don't know what the next move is going to be. Are they going to come alive? And you're just waiting as a kid, especially when you have a clown like me and every other kid in the world in their room, or maybe after Poltergeist, they don't. You're thinking that clown doll is going to do something to me. It's going to come alive. And, you know, and those eyes are like shark eyes, you know, like an allude to Jaws. You don't know what's going on behind those beady eyes. And I find that really ominous and really scary. So I think that's my theory why there's a universal fear of clowns.
Well, you definitely had a hand in that one for sure. All right. So do you have any like upcoming projects in the future? And I guess now that I'm looking at this, we're at year 38 for Poltergeist. So is there anything specially planned for like a 40th anniversary?
Nothing I planned specifically, but if anyone like exhibitors are doing that, I'm out there and I'd love to be part of the magic, you know, because it is amazing. I didn't even think about that it's going to be 40 years. And it's amazing. The movie has that much staying power almost into the fourth decade that it's been mm-hmm. around.
So oh yeah, it's a solid movie. It still holds up to this day. Like it's still, you know, while once you revisit a film that may have dated effects or dated, you know, sets or dated wardrobe, like you always think that there's going to be a piece of that movie that gets left behind. But with this movie, it doesn't. If anything, I feel like it allows you the chance to dive deeper into it and be like, oh no, there really is a lot of layers to this film that still hold up throughout its timeline.
It's really true. And I think one of the universal reasons why this film works, if you really look at it, it doesn't rely upon the special effects. You know, the engine of this film, if you want to put it that way, is the relation between, you know, the mother and her child and losing the child. And anyone can identify with that, whether you live in, you know, Bangladesh or Los Angeles, a mother's love for her child is more, you know, so powerful. And that is the story through Poltergeist, you know, about a little girl who's been taken from her mom and the mom has to get her back. And everything else is just icing on the cake in terms of the special effects. So, I mean, let's face it, you know, some of the effects don't hold up as well as they might today. But you put that aside because it's the story and the relation between the characters. And you can really see that relation between the mother, her children, and all of us. We really seem like a real family. And I think something that's not traditional in a horror movie that Poltergeist does, if you study the film, is that you really get to know the characters. The audience, you know, Spielberg and Hooper really allow us to get to know everyone before anything really big happens. You know, there really aren't that many jump scares in the first 20, 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a lot of pressure today, you know, and in terms of filmmaker, I've seen this from studio notes myself, that we've got to move into the story a lot faster. And they don't trust an audience enough to think they're going to, you know, they're going to get bored. They're going to turn it off. But I think, you know, because they had the guts, or maybe that's the way films really were in the early 80s, that patience is rewarded because you have a film where you really care about the characters and you love them. And then when all the big things go on, when I get attacked by a tree and the clown doll, you know me, you care about me. So you're rooting for me.
That's so Spielberg. And I love his style of filmmaking. Like, you know, it's funny because when my fiance and I were watching this, he's also on the podcast, he watched all of these retro Halloween films with me, and we were watching the beginning of it and we were like, you know, like from the second a film starts that it's a Spielberg film. There's like a cadence to it. And then you hear the music and like, you're like, okay, like I know what I'm in for. This is going to be patient. It's going to be, you know, it's going to take me along this journey. It's not immediately just going to like dump me into the middle of something where it's like, catch up. We're going. And I appreciate that about his films. I like that.
I know. Well, he truly, you know, is the master filmmaker, and he really, you know, he wrote the script for Poltergeist. And I asked him, you know, on the set, you know, can I change this line, you know, because you're the writer. And he said, no, you don't want to say that because the audience is already thinking that. So he, in terms of, he knows what the audience is anticipating in every scene. And a lot of filmmakers don't know that. They just put it out there and they're hoping something really works. But everything that happens in a Spielberg film is very well planned and anticipated. And that's what truly makes him the master storyteller.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he really is quite a genius when it comes to kind of turning the camera onto what he sees as being like an idyllic suburban family and what the majority of audiences are going to be able to relate to.
Yeah, and I think, especially in his early work, he really taps into things that everyone can identify with. I mean, that's why Close Encounters, you know, is such a genius movie. And you have this Midwest family, and you throw them into this crazy situation, and anyone can identify with that, you know, rich, poor, and all those events that were happening. I just watched Close Encounters again. I'm like, wow, this film is so brilliant, you know, and everyone's so natural. And all the performances are so natural. And I think that's really why we can, you know, identify with all the characters on that.
Oh, I definitely agree. So here's kind of a little bit of a hot button issue that maybe we can get your take on. You probably have a lot more familiarity with the genre, but this is something that is up for constant debate. And what do you think defines a horror film?
I thought about that too. I remember I took a class at USC and it was like genre of filmmaking. It was 393. It was like kind of an archaic kind of class. And they broke down what the genre is. And I think there's traditional certain elements that are in horror movies. You know, it's taking a situation that can be, that any normal person can relate to, that is out of that supernatural, that that's horrific in some way, shape, or form. I think that's like the broad scope of what a horror movie is. Now, in terms of like all the different elements, I think the genre has shifted over ever since like Nosferatu, you know, the first vampire movie. I mean, there's certain universal things that that make us all afraid, you know, fear of death, you know. And, you know, I think we like those kind of situations. We just don't want to experience in real life, but we love, it's like a roller coaster ride. We want to experience that in terms of, you know, cinema. So I think being scared and afraid and taking on that kind of ride and being put in a situation that's so abnormal. And I think you can play with a lot of those elements too. Like for instance, in Celebrity Crush, if I can promote my movie again.
Absolutely.
I took the horror genre, I took all those elements and I wanted those jump scares in it. But at the same time, I wanted it to be kind of horrific and funny. So I infused kind of a black comedy into it too. And you know, honestly, when I made the movie, my friends read the script and they were like, Oliver, this is kind of daring. You're kind of departing from the tropes of horror. It might not really work, but I figured, you know, it's an independent film. I'm into experimentation in terms of cinema and let's just go for it. So you need all those kind of like those fears and those jump scares in it. And I think, you know, those elements are critical to like a horror movie. You know, that's my roundabout kind of on the spot theory of what horror is.
Right on. Well, I mean, it's one of those things that I think is really hard to define, depending on who you're talking to, because everyone is scared by something different, you know? And I think one of the things that I think comes up for debate as far as horror movies are concerned is what kind of rating they get. And this is, Poltergeist is another one of those films that was severely traumatizing to people, but was given a PG rating.
You know, it's really, and I think, you know, it's rating system, you know, going back to, you know, the Hays Code, going back to the 1930s, the culture, it's always about where you are in terms of our culture. And I think we were ready, the Hays Code, where there were so, you know, when the movies first started, they were outrageous, man, nudity and crazy things going on. Then you had a code that was really pretty restrictive, you know, and you actually had to submit your scripts to, you know, an organization. And then I guess they approved it. And you couldn't even have people sleeping in the same bed, and release it theatrically. And now, you know, in the 1970s and things were a little more wild. So I think, you know, the code in terms of what the restrictions and what the ratings are really are determined by the culture and where we are at any given time in our history.
It's an incredibly valid point.
I think it's interesting to see kind of the evolution, if you will, of content and films. Because I've had conversations with people where they're like, man, you know, we've desensitized a whole generation because of the content we have on screen. But to your point, like some of it is actually more censored now than it was 10, 20 years ago.
Yeah, I think certain elements are, and other things really aren't though, too.
At the same time. But like the gore. So going back to horror, I feel like gore and the horror genre has really opened up, and there's a lot more that's acceptable in this genre now, and it's almost expected now than it was before. Like, you have these films like Halloween and Poltergeist that, you know, don't have as much blood as we get now, but oftentimes horror films get really gory these days.
It's really true. I don't think there's any strict rule when to use it, not use it as a filmmaker. I really think it depends on the kind of movie you're making. I mean, if you're doing a suspenseful film, you know what? You know, the imagination of the audience is going to be far more powerful than anything you could possibly think of. But like in Celebrity Crush, we have a lot of those kind of visceral kind of effects, you know, in it. And it works because we're kind of playing on that genre of the 1980s, like blood and all these gross out kind of situations. But, you know, like I was just rewatching like Dress to Kill, you know, which is, you know, Brian De Palma's movie. And, you know, it has kind of horror elements of suspense. And really, you know, there is some blood, but there really isn't that much blood in the movie, but in the movie is incredibly suspenseful.
Another question that came up yesterday when we were recording is everybody kind of went around and talked about what was the scariest movie that they've ever seen. And I think that's kind of what spawned this whole conversation of, you know, different things scare different people. Some people consider one thing to be the most horrific thing they've ever seen. And then, you know, it can be completely opposite from somebody else's answer, which it was yesterday. So I'm interested to hear what yours is.
I would say the scariest movie I've ever saw, and it's still to this day, I would say The Exorcist. I'm just terrified by that film, and it always gets me. I can watch that film a million times, and I'm still terrified by some of the elements. And then for me, why that film works so well is it's played so real, and it's very realistic. And we were just talking about what a slow burn in horror it is. It's very slow. And, you know, you get to know the little girl, and you get to know the mom, and these situations seem very realistic. And mm-hmm. the way Bill Friedkin approaches it is that he's saying he has a very realistic approach. And he's like, this girl has psychological issues, and they take her to the doctors. And the moment that was the scariest for me, I feel in that film, was when the doctors say, we don't know what's going on with her. And then they turn to realize this might be a supernatural situation. So they tried every possible, you know, coherent scientific approach, and there isn't one. And that's what really terrifies me about that film, because there's things, you know, that go bump in the night and you're wondering, like, what is that? You know, so it really plays into all my personal fears.
That's my scariest film too. That scene where, and I brought this up yesterday, but that scene where the girl literally crawls down the stairs, I started crying when I watched it for the first time.
It is. It's God. And, you know, and talk about the fact of lack of blood, and there is really little, if nothing. You never really see that. There's not that many, except for when her head's turning around and stuff like that. But except for those little scenes, but the whole burn, the setup of the movie, even the director's cut has a lot of really, you know, things that really play in your psychology.
Well, and The Exorcist has a really interesting history in cinema culture for sure, because, I mean, that movie is famous for many reasons, but also, like Poltergeist, has a little bit of infamy attached to it as well, as some rumors of some things that, like, may have happened on set, you know. So it's one of those things that I think we allow ourselves as moviegoers to keep, like, the mythology of why we go to the movies alive. And I think we find something specific about an experience that we enjoyed. And then we have to create a certain, not fiction, but a certain amount of storytelling around it. I think that has to do a lot with just how much we as the audience respect that movie going experience.
No, it's really true. And I think the best horror movies plug into people's personal life experiences. It's like, that's why Jaws is so amazing, is that, you know, we're all scared of sharks, or we were at that point in history. And you go to the beach and you're thinking, you know, you can't see anything in the dark, murky water. Is there a huge fish that's going to come and attack me? So that, what's so great about Jaws, that plugged into a psychosis that was pretty much universal at that time too. So I think, you know, in Exorcist too, is there evil? Is there a demon? And if there is a demon, could it impact me or my child or come into my world? And I really think that when you do that kind of style of filmmaking that has some, you know, mythology already built into it, and you plug that into the movie making experience, it's so much more powerful that way.
Well, I think scared of closets for years. Like every horror movie, you know, if somebody goes and opens the closet, it was in Halloween, it was in Poltergeist. Yep. Like, you know, don't mess with the closet. Just leave it shut. Don't go over there. You open the closet and you will die.
Yeah, it's really true. You always, I mean, even to this day, I always check the closet before I go to sleep. Is anyone in there? Mm-hmm. Is it like paranormal, or is it someone hiding that broke into the house or something like that?
Closet doors have to be shut.
You got to always check the closet door.
But this has nothing to do with you almost being sucked into a closet as a child?
No, I was terrified. You know, it's funny. When I was auditioning for Poltergeist, it was top secret. We didn't know what the story was at all. And they asked me, it was like this huge open call. I mean, thousands of kids were being seen. And they said, Oliver, now tell us what you're scared of. And I said, I'm afraid of closets, trees, and like clown dolls. I'm not kidding. I said those like three components, and they said, this is Robbie, this is the guy we want, I think.
Right on. Well, I think we're starting to get close to that time where we're going to have to sign off here. We've only got a few minutes left of our time period here. But Oliver, really, this has been like a fanboy moment for me, so I really appreciate you coming on the show. This is so incredible. We can't thank you enough.
And this has been great ego food. I love talking about Poltergeist and living the experience.
Maybe we can have you back sometime again in the future.
That sounds great. Yeah, definitely have me on.
All right. Well, so if anyone is near a theater that is currently showing movies, I would definitely check out to make sure that your theater could potentially be playing Poltergeist at this very moment. I'm hoping so that when the theaters open near me, that this will be one of the ones that I'll go definitely check out on the big screen. And then his newest film, Celebrity Crush, is available on iTunes, Amazon Prime.
And Vudu and like Xbox and all those places like that.
Last thing before we go, I have to mention that if your theater is not playing Poltergeist or one of your favorite retro horror films, a lot of theaters are doing private rentals for like as little as $100 now, where you can get a whole group of people together and have a really fun Halloween movie night with all your closest friends.
God, that'd be an awesome experience for $100. Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
All right. Well, again, thank you so much, Oliver, for being with us today.
Good to see you guys. Thanks so much for having me. Okay, bye.